Good evening, and welcome to another edition of the JMB Sports Blog Podcast. I'm Todd. I'm joined, as always, by my buddy Rob. What's up, Rob?
Good evening, everyone.
Hopefully everyone is ready for some shit-stained Saturday at CAA tournament action.
Is that what we're calling it?
I don't know. We got to come up with something to replace Pillow Fight Friday. So
I don't know.
I don't know. But, so there may be some adults tonight. As always, we are brought to you by Pale Fire Brewing in Harrisonburg, Virginia. You can go by the tap room anytime and mention the podcast. You'll get a free Pale Fire pint glass. Thanks, as always, to Pale Fire for being our first and original sponsor. We're so lucky to have them. And for the second week, we are brought to you by Mossy Creek Fly Fishing in Harrisonburg, Virginia. You can go by their store there in Harrisonburg, mention the podcast, and you'll get a free Mossy Creek sticker. So we'd love for a few of you to go in there. Just mention it so they know the word's getting out. We're so thrilled to have them on board. They've got lots of great stuff coming up. Rob, I know it's cold down there, but I've seen them. It seems like they're getting ready for the spring season here.
It's cold, but it's about to be heaven in the Shenandoah Valley if you like chasing trout.
That's right. So thanks to Pale Fire and Mossy Creek. And we're just so looking forward to another year, this year with both of them. What we're going to do tonight, we are not going to rehash the men's basketball coaching situation. There will be plenty of time for that next week and other weeks to come. I feel like we've said the same thing the last few weeks. But we're going to go around a little bit. We'll do a couple things here, and then we're going to look at the CAA tourney preview this weekend coming up in Charleston, South Carolina, and talk a little bit about something we're trying to get started this year for an old friend of ours that's really important to us. And then we're going to do our sort of the starting five for JMU hoops since the Lefty era. So from our time till now, I know Rob with Dylan McKay and King Kong Bundy going down this week. I was feeling particularly old, especially. I traveled for work the last couple of days and I'm just wiped out. So I feel particularly old this evening.
I don't know, man. The whole celebrity death thing never really got me. But then when you start seeing these people that, you know, what was Luke Perry, like 52? You're like, man, that's young.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different perspective. You feel like people are going down in the prime of their lives.
Right. Well, and if that's the prime, like, we're not that far away from there. So.
Exactly.
Exactly.
I'm having an existential crisis over all this crap. But.
So anyways, a couple quick notes. Women's basketball has already earned the CAA regular season title, or at least a share of it. Big win. They had a big win over Towson, a team that had given them some problems over the weekend. It was tight, but they got the job done as usual. And we're certainly looking more forward to being excited about a hoops team next week as we project onto the women's tournament the following weekend.
But I'm not giving up hope. I'm so excited. Maybe the men can, without Banks, which is what they announced.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's rough, but I don't know. You still got to root for him. And I'm also kind of one eye on the future. I'm kind of excited about the Virginia High School State Championship going down tomorrow featuring Michael Christmas's team. One of JMU's big recruits, the guy had 24 points, I think, in the South.
Oh, nice.
Finals.
Yep.
Things can always get better.
Yep. That's right. So there's a couple more things. Softball had a little bit of a bump in the road this weekend. I think they had hoped to get a win in two of their big games. They did not on Sunday, but they've got another chance coming up. I think tomorrow, actually, they're still out there in Arizona and they're playing a couple more big name teams this week. So that will be good for them. I think they went 2-2 over the weekend, but the two losses were the two kind of big name teams. Lacrosse destroyed Canisius. I don't really know what that means, but they won 21-4. They seem to be rolling right along. And
well, that was expected, but it's good. They met expectations.
They did.
They had to have a blowout loss. You had to have a blowout victory. You had to have a convincing one. I believe the backup goalie got some run in the second half.
Nice.
So some other players got out there. All in all, you know, another great, great performance. Really have turned things around since a tough opener against UNC.
No, they look right on track right now. And I think they have a big one either tomorrow or this week at Penn State.
Yeah.
I think I heard they've moved that into the football's indoor facility because of the weather, but that should not affect the Lady Dukes. So looking forward to that. That's a good chance for them. I think JMU's in the top 10 and Penn State's in the top 20. So another chance for a marquee opportunity here for the lacrosse team. But Rob, so this Saturday, I don't know if it was expected coming into the season, but as usual, JMU will be opening the CAA tournament in the quietest game in the world at 4 p.m. in North Charleston, in the 8-9 game versus Towson. I have to imagine. I put the over-under on fans. What do you think? Maybe 300 in the arena for this game?
Yeah. Well, didn't the local I don't know if it's the planning committee or whatever, whoever sponsors this, maybe the CAA. Mm-hmm. They gave away like 60,000 tickets.
Oh, wow. Jersey Mike's. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. To youth around there. I guess it's like free kid with a paying adult.
Okay. Charleston Chamber of Commerce getting it done.
Yeah. I don't know if you'll really see that on Saturday.
Right.
But it's going to be rough, man. This was kind of controversial when they moved to North Charleston or Charleston, whatever you want to call it. I was kind of excited about it.
Yeah.
But it hasn't.
No, it hasn't worked
really
out.
Been worth going down.
No, and this,
but also the schedule, like it's very difficult to do the Saturday, Sunday, stick around Monday, Tuesday is the change.
Yeah, Tuesday, yeah.
That's hard to plan a weekend. You know, I guess if you're Northeastern or Hofstra, you can feel pretty confident, but are you really going to book a 4-day trip?
Yeah, it's hard. It's take time off to do work and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit easier if you can count on the game just being on a Monday, make a 3-day weekend out of it. And if you don't make it, whatever, you still get out of there. You're still in Charleston, but it's just a weird setup. So
it is.
And I'm not anticipating a ton of fans.
No.
Unless Charleston makes a run.
Yeah, they're the third seed. They could certainly make a run. That's what happened last year. It was a great environment in the championship game last year.
Some home cooking championship game.
And I think they got to be disappointed this year. The two games on Saturday are JMU Towson in the 8-9. And unfortunately for the Charleston, the 7-10 game is Elon UNCW. Who are the other two schools that, you know, really might have, were they better, might have brought some people, but hard to think they're any more excited than we are about this.
No, so, it's going to be rough.
So
I mean, it's getting to the point where the CAA might really need to take a look. And if it works out in DC, great. But if it doesn't, they might be looking at a, you know, higher seed host type tournament setup.
Yeah, I mean, I actually am totally in favor of that. I know that it just immediately puts you in the low major category. The way the CAA has played the last 5 or 6 years, I don't know that
they're a low major.
They're a low major. That's what it is. Yeah, they are. And one thing's for sure. I mean, when you watch that like Patriot League semifinal final, and it's at the home court of the higher seed, it's really fun to watch. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen over the years where like American will make a run, and suddenly it's a big deal. You know, if they get to the final and they're hosting the game, you can imagine what it would be like at JMU if JMU made the championship at home or something like that, or really for any of these teams. I mean, even Hofstra or Drexel or anybody would be exciting. So yeah, I wouldn't have any problem with that. I know the CAA is particularly tough because of the travel this time of year. I mean, it is such a widespread league geographically that it would be hard for, you know, to get Charleston up to Northeastern, say, for the final or something like that. But
it would, but it's really hard to draw fans.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll be a little better with DC.
Yep.
DC, you're kind of counting on JMU, William & Mary. It's a much easier trip for Hofstra.
Yeah, it's an easy trip for it. I mean, you got Towson, Delaware. Yeah. I mean, I think for Drexel, a lot of teams really, especially if a team makes a run, you know, and you get to the semifinal or final and you people decide they can get there. I mean, that's the way we used to be when the game was in Richmond, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If JMU and Towson could get it together and just finish in the top half or top four,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to say any one school is more important than another because that's not the case.
No.
But, man, it would be a lot better for the tournament, for the league as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. It's kind of disappointing. We talk about the CAA being kind of on that tier of the mid-major / low major.
Mm-hmm.
It's largely because of JMU.
I mean,
JMU is part of the problem. They're playing just this – really bad out of conference schedule, which kills your strength of schedule, and it's a mess. So
it is, and you got it, really
the positive is you can improve it. You don't need to look. It's different than football when fans kind of look around and poke at the low hanging at the kind of lesser teams and say they're dragging JMU down. In this sense, they kind of control their own destiny.
Yeah, they do.
You know, the program improves, it will help the conference. You know, we are a little bit of the underperformer. I don't want to say anchor because I don't think that's the case. It's still one of the better schools in terms of attendance, which is really sad.
But
with a quick turnaround, JMU gets back to that top four, top five, it'll really help the league.
It would. And it's just frustrating because JMU is definitely, at this point, I mean, I'm sure there are others that would disagree with us, but I mean, JMU and Delaware are really kind of the marquee programs in the league. In other sports.
For total programs.
Yeah. And both of them have not been, you know, I mean, JMU in particular is the marquee program for so many other sports, and they're just not pulling their weight in men's hoops. So, yeah. What do you think? I mean, JMU plays Towson, certainly a winnable game. They've lost to Towson this year, so certainly not a guarantee in any stretch. The winner will play the number one seed, Hofstra. I think if you and I are being, you know, objective about this, I'm not sure that Hofstra would be either of our favorite to win the tournament.
Northeastern
and Charleston in the 2-3. I mean, yeah. Northeastern, I think, is probably the most talented team. And Charleston, if they made a run, obviously they would have home court advantage throughout this, which has, you know, could serve them really well. And Hofstra has struggled a little bit. Oddly enough, JMU beat Hofstra just 2 weeks ago. So
Hofstra's had a lot of trouble guarding people, and they play a very aggressive style, get a lot of shots, score a lot of points, mm-hmm. but give up a lot of points.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The idea of doing that three times in 3 days, winning, you know, three games in the 80s,
yep.
that seems a little exhausting to me.
It does.
I think Cohen is an excellent coach at Northeastern, and Pasika now healthy. And,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think after last year, they got a big chip on their shoulder. I thought they got completely jobbed in
the
final.
In the final, yeah.
But I think they're a talented team. I think Hofstra's amazing, too. Julia Wright-Foreman and Pemberton are both terrific players. Mm-hmm. But I just think top to bottom, I think Northeastern's a little more complete. And they play a style of ball that will be a little less exhausting. But you never know. I mean, if Hofstra cruises to a 20-25 point win, against the Towson or JMU team coming off a tough victory on a Saturday night, could make all the difference. But if Hofstra needs to play three of the types of games they've played down the stretch, these kind of nail-biter games in the 80s or 90s, that's a tough ask to win three of those.
It is. And we'll see. I mean, I don't think it's worth talking beyond the second game against Hofstra for JMU now. William & Mary Delaware winner would await in the semis for the winner of Hofstra, JMU, Towson. So
it would be funny if this ends up being William and Mary's year.
I think both of us would say, you know, if JMU is eliminated prior to playing William and Mary, we will be rooting very hard for William and Mary, always.
Yeah,
this would be a funny year if somehow William and Mary snuck in this year, right?
Yeah, after some of the scenes they've had with the Marcus Thornton years and the close losses.
Yeah,
I don't know. It'd be something else.
Yeah. So the championship is on Tuesday at 7:00. On what is it, like Made Up Sports TV Network or something? No,
something. Like
I don't know. Good job, CAA. So
take more selfies, right. Joey D.
Yeah. So Rob, I don't have. I did want you to. Will you talk a little bit though about what we want to do this week?
Oh yeah, this is pretty simple. I was tweeting with some CAA hoops folks last night. Todd and I mentioned in the past that one of our Twitter friends, CAA basketball friends, Joe Sohosky, passed away last year. He was an ODU alum.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously kind of his fandom went more in the direction of Conference USA, but he still was a big part of the CAA Hoops Twitter and would still show up at the CAA Hoops tournament. We met him, Baltimore River of ULOS. Joe was one of these guys, kind of a very gracious, positive, always trying to make a good impact, very passionate about his teams, mm-hmm. but focused on the bigger picture. And would always do things like if JMU had a big win, he'd reach out to the two of us and say, hey, I want to do something to honor the guys or honor the fans. Can you tell me a local charity in Harrisburg that I could? Or he was mm-hmm. one of the guys in the Bills Mafia, you know, when Dalton threw that, you know, they all went crazy. Joe was one of those guys that really got behind that idea of, hey, let's try to sports into making a difference in the community. So he always was pushing to, like, whoever wins, I'm going to donate to that local food bank.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what, Todd, that's what we're asking people to do.
Yeah.
A bunch of people last night jumped on board, pledged to do it. All the old CA Hoops heads, you know, Beach and Brodsky and Gary, all those guys. So Todd and I are going to pledge, like, whoever wins this tournament, we will donate to a local food bank, local to that school. Mm-hmm. and we'd like to encourage everybody to do the same thing, mm-hmm. just to pay it forward, try to make something positive out of all of our crazy emotions over sports,
yeah.
whether it's $5, $50, $500, doesn't matter. Just, we encourage you to please tune into the game, root for your team, whoever wins, let's try to just make a difference by saying, hey, if it's Boston, if it's Harrisonburg, if it's Delaware,
yep.
we'll choose a charity, donate, and then just pass it on. See if we can get this growing.
Yeah. And, If somebody gets screwed in the championship and loses in a bizarre way, maybe we'll do it to the losing
we'll
school.
We'll throw a little that yeah. way. A couple people did that. They're like, that's something Joe would do. Yeah. I will donate to the losing school. Right. But, you know,
especially if it's day. William so, Mary.
Yes.
Yeah. So we miss you, Joe. Little way of saying we miss you. So,
yep.
So what we wanted to do tonight was talk about, this had come up a couple weeks ago. Somebody had asked us to do the starting five in the last 30 years. For JMU. And I don't know if we're going to go all the way back to 30 years, but we were thinking we will go back 2025 to the left.
That's
year.
What I, yeah. That's what I consider the modern era.
Yeah.
It's what a lot of people consider ancient times.
Right.
we're doing this because that's when you and I became JMU. It's when we became aware of right. JMU. We were students. We started following it. Let's not pretend that we were watching the team in the 80s.
No.
So we'll just start like, well, let's draw the line at Lefty's tourney team,
yep.
which is the 93-94 team.
Yep. So, Rob, you want to start us off? Guess, yeah, we're doing this well, together. Well, we're not each choosing yeah, a player. Yeah.
No, we're just going to kind of work this through. I was thinking, let's not be sticklers for positions.
No. Let's just pick the guys, like five guys we want to play. Yeah.
Five guys, particularly given in this time frame, basketball has changed so much.
Right.
I don't think you even see anybody listed as a center on the roster in the past 10 years. It's kind of become positionless basketball
yeah.
where everybody needs to do everything. But let's try to at least frame it around. Let's start the discussion with point guard. I think we've always had point guards.
Yep.
That's the one position that still stands out.
Mm-hmm. It's been really frustrating the last couple of years, actually. And I know guys have stepped up to play the role. And now we have some hope for DeShaun Parker to keep growing into it. But when I was thinking about
– I really like his game.
Right. But when I was thinking about point guard, it felt like even in the worst years of the Dean Kuemper era – it felt like the one position JMU could count on was having a reliable point guard, you know? And they just, yeah. it's a little frustrating right now to not have somebody that you're absolutely sure when they're on the ball, you feel comfortable that it's not going to be a turnover. So,
yeah. And I think that's one thing Parker's doing great. Parker's definitely taking care of the ball, but I mean, he's a freshman and he's doing things that he probably didn't expect, wanted to do, but probably didn't expect to be doing this far in his career.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So he's still a little bit learning the offense. I went way back to a guy, Darren McClinton.
Oh, yeah. I put McClinton on my list. He wasn't – yeah, okay. That's awesome. Yep.
He was kind of a score-first mm-hmm. point guard, averaged over 20 a game as a senior. He was on that team that went to the tourney. I think he was a sophomore that mm-hmm. year. He's a big, big kind of deal in the basketball training industry around
yep.
here. You know, works with a lot of AAU guys. Actually sponsored the Kenner League team that Matt Lewis played on over the summer.
So okay. So,
he was a really dynamic player on
really
a roster,
dynamic. Yeah.
full of dynamic. I mean, it we could easily just choose the starting five from that team.
Yeah, that team.
And nobody'd
pretty,
really,
yeah.
nobody'd really have a gripe with it. So he was one guy I looked at. Then another, like an under the radar person, and because of the Kenner years, we'll get reliable.
Right,
just steady. I think Pierre Curtis.
I do too. He was the guy I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's not flashy. He didn't have like outlandish stats. Really, when Brady came in, he kind of moved back to more of a role player thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought did an excellent job of doing that, being a team first guy, not wanting really set an example. Well, that was the Bernard Wells and Devon Moore came in.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
He was just a steady guy, not a surprise. I think he's coaching.
He is. He's
Furman
coaching
the
women's team at Furman. Yeah.
Yeah, he's an assistant.
Yep.
So he was just a really steady guy. But who else you got?
I thought Ron Curry is another one.
Yeah.
You know, that in that – I was just going to say Curtis over Curry. I think Curry actually has probably the more impressive, you know, career stats and stuff if you look back. But a very similar type player. I mean, all three of those guys, McClinton, Curtis, Curry, that's what I was thinking about is we had a run there of, you know, where it seemed like – we had guys that really played point for 3 or 4 years and were just so reliable on the ball. And to sort of be playing people, you know, like last year, Matt Lewis as a freshman is playing out of position there and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's been a real sore spot for the Dukes. And some of the good wins they've had this year have been games when Parker's really developed down the stretch. So, yeah, no, I think those are all good choices.
Well, and then Devon Moore.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about Devon Moore. Yeah, I mean, we love Devon Moore. Same thing, yeah.
Devon Moore, like, I think he was a member of, like, a really weird injury-plagued class. He had 1 year lost to an injury. Julius Wells is...
Well, I was going to say Julius Wells for another position here.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm going to say, like, remember he went out with, like, heart ailment, then he had Semenov. It was weird. He was a terrific crunch-time player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in kind of the peak CAA, when he was playing with Denzel Bowles and VCU as a team, like, there were some epic battles where people just went head-to-head, and he would just go at it. The thing that always stands out, right or wrong, about Devon Moore is I felt like every game he had what he appeared or what he made look like, you know, a career-ending injury. That guy would go down and twist an ankle.
He did.
And, like, everybody would just go nuts, and he'd be writhing in pain, and then he'd hop back up and be fine. But I guess if I had to choose from all them, I'm going Curry or McClinton.
Yeah, I think those are the two best. I mean, I love Curtis because he was the best player on some really bad teams. And I love Moore because at the end of the game, he was a better player in the last 4 minutes than...
Could take it or another
Yeah, he really... And just was unafraid of that kind of focus. But yeah, I think it's just in pure talent and ability that we've watched. I think it's got to be McClinton or Curry, probably.
Yeah. I'd go Curry from the more traditional point guard. McClinton, you could slide over to two.
Yeah, I mean, McClinton occasionally gets you 30, you know.
Yeah.
Or,
no, he was explosive.
Right. I mean, it was definitely a score-first player.
Yep.
Yeah. So, no, that's good. And then he's probably a three, really. But, yeah, Julius Wells, our buddy Frank, is coming over to hang out a little bit. And I know that's his favorite player.
He loves
Julius Wells. Julius Wells, one of those players who has never met a shot he didn't like, but could really fill it up.
He could.
Yeah, I mean, just that's a guy who, when he got going, there was no – I mean, he really could score 30 any night and made it worth watching some rough teams.
He played with Denzel when it was – and there were stretches where everybody else was injured, just the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And teams would just focus on shutting those two guys down and letting everybody else try to beat them. And they couldn't do it. You know, Wells, and on any given night, one of them would have 25, the other one would have 14.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just trade off. Really kind of, I don't want to say it's tragic. It's only basketball.
Right.
But his career ended because they discovered he had a heart condition. So he just, I think he ended, midway through his senior year, they found out, which was kind of scary.
Yeah.
But, you know. Yeah, I don't know. I had him kind of listed as like a forward guard. Everybody's kind of point guard. Then there's just kind of like everybody else and then post guys. But I would certainly put Wells up there among the better guys. Another person, if we're looking at maybe that forward, that 3-4 thing that Wells played, Juwan James.
Yeah.
Remember him under Keener?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like so many people have just completely written off the Keener years and the Dillard years as unproductive. There was nothing there. There were some good players. Juwan James, Junkyard Dog, was just a gritty, tough player. Wasn't particularly large, but was an outstanding rebounder.
Mm-hmm.
Could get you just kind of those dirty hustle buckets on teams that really didn't have much hope of winning.
No.
I mean,
No.
I mean, he was on like teams that won five games, seven games.
Right.
But he gave his all every night. Like you wouldn't know that the team had no shot of going to the postseason, no shot of hitting 10 wins by watching him. He played every game like it was, you know, NCAA tournament on the line. Just a fun guy to watch during some pretty rough years.
Yeah. I mean, I think another guy in that same vein is Chatney Howard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like.
Absolutely.
Yeah, where you're like, okay, this is pretty fun because this guy might score 28 tonight. But I don't.
He played for Dillard, right?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I didn't over research this, but yeah, it was definitely some rough teams, you know.
Yeah,
yeah, but
then
a real
another
score.
Like
mm-hmm.
if we're talking like another like 3-4 mm-hmm. guy, AJ Davis.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think all those guys from the 13 team, you know. But AJ Davis, I just thought about Davis and Nation both, of just being so fun for this, you know, just meteoric. For one season, basically, right?
Yeah. I mean, Davis, explosive, mm-hmm. I guess we best describe him, but when motivated,
yeah,
which wasn't always a given, but when he had his game and he was motivated and playing hard, he was arguably one of the top two or three most exciting dudes seen I've been in a JMU uniform. You know, I mean, you're talking like Sports Center type, top 10 type dunks, long threes. He could beat people off the dribble. He's the type of guy, he could, you know, get a lot of steals on the wing and then just bring it down for big thunderous jams, alley-oops. And it all clicked with him. Like, he and Brady had a very weird relationship. He's spent a number of times. But then, what was it, maybe like late January or February of his senior year when he was like 25. It all clicked, and he just took over. He absolutely dominated that CAA tournament when they won.
He just took over completely.
He took over. Player of the tournament by far. And then the other guy you got to talk about, if we're going like wings or court, head coach Lou Rowe. That guy was a hell of a player.
I mean, Lou Rowe's a little before my time, but I mean, there's no doubt, right? I mean, he's actually legitimately a great player, right?
Great.
And a great player on good teams. I mean, not a great player on bad teams, you know?
No, a great player on a tournament team. I think it was the second or third leading scorer on that tournament team. I think he graduated the year before you came.
Yeah, and he did. And I, you know, that was also when the CAA was definitely a mid-major, right? I mean, that was a deep league with good players. And, you know, he could hold his own with anybody, anywhere. Yeah.
And he kind of was like a throwback player. I mean, very representative of the time that he played in the 90s. Great mid-range game. Had a really good ability to kind of drive and either get to the rack or pull up from like 10 feet in the lane, which is something you don't see a lot of guys do nowadays, and it's kind of viewed as not very efficient. But back then, people didn't, I don't say they didn't know any better, but that was an effective strategy. That was something he looked for, and he was great at. Long player, just really talented. Played very well kind of off of Clayton Ritter, who is a traditional post player. Again, something you don't really see nowadays. But people who kind of question why those of us like of my era are kind of very reluctant to draw any conclusions about Rowe or criticize Rowe, it's because he was just a blast to watch in his prime.
I mean, no doubt about it. And then, Rob, the other guy we got to talk about while we're doing the forwards, because I'm guessing where we're going on the center, is Semenov, right? I mean, we got to talk about the king of the 8-year career, Andrei Semenov. I think still playing in Europe fairly successfully. You know, look, he's just a fun guy to watch, right? I mean, obviously was a threat to shoot threes all the time, but also did a ton of little things. I mean, rebounded, you know, put effort into his rebounding on the defensive end. Never afraid of a flop on the defensive end, and just a really fun guy, you know, a ton of personality on the court. And now,
people think I'm insulting him, but I mean this as a compliment. Semenov was the closest thing to like a Duke player we've ever had, in the sense that, like, if you're a JMU fan, you love him, but if you're not, you loathe him. Like, people could, because he just was like, in the very best way possible, he knew how to make an absolute pest out of himself. And if that meant just playing good D, it was that, or just hitting kind of the three, or flopping on offense or defense,
right?
Tugging on guys' jerseys. Like, he had kind of that Duke slash old man at the YMCA game. That could be really effective. So, but who are you going to think? Like,
I was thinking Denzel. I mean,
well, no, I'm saying like, who are we choosing there? So we've got Devon for point guard, then forward. Here, what are we thinking?
Our point guard, we have Curry or McClinton. And then we got Wells. I think Juwan James, Julius Wells are probably my – I don't know if I can have some combination of those two.
I might go Juwan.
Yeah.
Just kind of throw a bone to that error.
Yeah, we may not play any defense on this team, but
– No.
No.
highest ceiling would be A.J. Davis, but he – It was just a little bit too brief.
Yes, I think so too. Yeah.
And Julius Wells, same thing. Unfortunate the way it ended, but he, you know, had his career cut short. So I'd say Juwan James.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. I think that's an easy one. Yeah.
We want to think about, what about like the two position?
Who can we put at the two? I don't know.
I was, first name that jumped out
to
me was Charles Cook. But
God, so frustrating. I know.
I just can't. I liked him. He was part of
a really fun year.
Really fun year.
And it's funny. I think I actually, in some ways, I like him. I actually like him and respect him more because of what he did at Dayton after he left JMU.
Oh yeah.
Like it's, which is,
he got better.
Yeah, it's a really weird thing to say. You know, normally we kind of are a little bit, I don't know. I mean, we're not angry. We're just kind of indifferent to people who transfer out.
But I actually,
I totally understood. Right. Yeah. I understood his reasons and
yeah.
I wished him the best. And it was great to see him make the most out of it. Yeah. Yeah. And a guy who clearly was not maximizing his potential at JMU. And, you know, some of that's just you're 19 and you haven't grown into what you're going to become.
Well, his sophomore year, there was a lot of off the court drama
right.
for that team. And from what I was told,
seems like it.
He just wanted to remove himself from it.
Yeah.
And you got to respect that. Mm-hmm. And then his kind of battery mate in Andre Nation, talk about brief.
Well, that's what I meant. I mean, Nation has probably, I don't know if I really sat down and thought about it. I'll bet Nation has two or three of my favorite all time, like JMU moments in basketball. Yeah. Right. I mean, just
the dunk in Indiana,
the block in the CAA tournament, you know, like, yeah, quite a few.
The buzzer beating alley.
Yeah. Just some really fun plays that, I mean, the sky was the limit for that kid. And unfortunately, he couldn't get it together off the court, you know?
Yeah.
That 13 team is really frustrating to look back at because, you know, they had two or three great weeks, but yeah. And we're all purple colored glasses because of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not going him. Hank Caluco.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I didn't, Caluco's before me, but I think
He was Rose class.
I mean, Caluco's the best moment ever at JMU probably.
Oh, right? the shot to get him in the tournament. Yeah. JMU? Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that's the high water mark for JMU basketball. Yeah.
He was like at the time a kind of 3-point assassin. I'd have to go back and look at the stats. That probably meant game.
Right.
You know, it was different. But he was a really highly rated recruit coming out, a lot of hype around him.
Yeah.
Again, just kind of like a good spot up shooter.
Another guy who like though it's funny. I would probably like him more if the only thing I ever knew about him was he was a great player and he hit that shot.
Mm-hmm.
But
Jason Williams.
He was also one of the witnesses at the Jason Williams limo driver shooting.
He was charged with tampering.
Right.
Tampered
evidence. You know, we kind of overlapped with one of his siblings at JMU. You know, there were always whispers that dad was heavily involved in yelling at coaches and stuff.
Oh yeah. He used to sit in front of me.
Right. Yeah. So like, I don't know. I mean, it's not the, there's a reason why a really highly rated recruit ends up at JMU sometimes. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, that's probably just pure slander from us, but.
Well, no, I'm leaning to put him in the starting.
I think so. I mean, that shot is as good as it ever gets. Yeah.
Do you remember Jabari Oots?
I had Oots. I wrote Oots down. I couldn't really say him. I thought that would be one that if Frank was here, he'd be all excited about. But yeah.
No, I mean, he transferred from Howard, I think. I looked it up. I'm acting like I remember.
Yeah, now that we're at the four and five position, I was thinking, I mean, Oots, Bowles. Yeah.
Yeah. What was Oots a four or like a three?
I don't know.
I had him
like
3-4. But he was like a 16-point, 4-assist-per-game player. I thought him more of as a wing guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was nice, but and then the other guy, nobody wants to talk about it now, and this is probably recency. Stucky Mosley's pretty good. I don't think he's at the level, but I think he's maybe a tier below.
Yeah.
In terms of for the role he played is probably underlooked, and depending on how things go the next couple of years, could really impact him. Like coming in as a transfer, being kind of the elder statesman who was new in his own right, but leading a team of very young guys. If Lewis and Banks and Wilson and Parker continue to develop, I think some of that credit might need to go to a guy like Mosley.
Yeah, I think so.
Who kind of led the way and led by example.
Yeah.
On a team that really didn't have much to play for. So.
Yeah, I think Mosley's weird. I think he's easily the best player in the Roe era. Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm hoping that Lewis or Banks
that's what I mean.
About that by the end.
But right now, you'd have to say that's
he's the guy,
right? And if something were to change with JMU in the next year, I don't know that, you know, Lewis and Banks would have to do a hell of a lot next year, just in 1 year to pass Mosley. So yeah. I certainly hope we get a couple more years of those guys, and I hope they are with a successful Lou Rowe coach team. But yeah, and then Rob, are we gonna put Denzel at the five? Just forget about defense entirely.
Well, Denzel or Clayton Ritter, and Clayton Ritter, I know.
Yeah, Clayton Ritter's a little early. Yeah, but yeah, obviously, look, Clayton Ritter is probably the better player. He makes the team. If we're really doing a starting five, he makes the team better than does Denzel. But in terms of our actual, I mean, did you get to see Clayton a little bit?
I did. Yeah, I did. He was there my freshman year. He was the leading scorer on the team that went to the tournament. Mm-hmm. And they went head to head against Florida. I think Andrew DeClercq was on that team.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And Greg Williams, Ritter, I don't know. He was maybe like a flasher Jeff Roland.
Yeah, right.
He was really good, but a guy who just got better every year and was very effective. Good post moves, nice touch, mm-hmm. Could rebound, decent passer. Wasn't a type of guy who was going to blow you away with any sort of highlight reel techniques, right. But could fill it up. You know, Bowles was a different level of offensive talent.
He was. It's just hard. I would pick Ritter. I'm picking Ritter here because I think he makes the team better. But yeah, in terms of just entertainment, I don't know. I was also so frustrated with Bowles because I'm like, how do we have a player that is this good and we are this bad? Part of it was Bowles' fault for not playing
less than zero interest in playing defense.
Right.
I mean, didn't even invited to like big time big man camps.
Yeah.
In between junior and senior year, and it was right there for him. People were saying like NBA potential if he can just improve on defense, puts more effort, and it didn't make a difference.
Then he went to like the Philippines and won the league MVP and won a championship because he really did. He just wanted to go somewhere where they didn't make him play defense at all.
But if
he caught the ball on the wing, you know, or the block, I mean, there's no better play. It was going in. I mean, and it was such a variety. I mean, it wasn't just like, I mean, he had an old school post up game, but he also made, you know, 15 footers consistently.
There was so much to his game. That was like wasn't it like going up against Bazemore and those guys too?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was like when the CA was a three bid league, was the Bulls team was the last team to beat VCU in the regular season.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
beat them at the road, and then they went up. I mean, and VCU was good that year. Bulls was a freak talent, but. I got to go Ritter, which means I'm in danger of having three guys.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
No, so what we got? So we got
Curry. Juwan James.
Ritter.
Who else did we see there? Then, do we want to go?
I might.
Koluko and Semenoff, maybe. Yeah.
Well, I don't. Semenoff, six man.
Yeah.
Semenoff, six man. Do we get Coach Rowe?
Definitely.
Coach, for me, the last
one Ritter,
Rowe or Julius Wells.
Rowe, Koluko, Curry, and who am I? And Juwan James. Yes. Yeah. That's probably our five. Yeah. Semenoff is the sixth man. Yeah. Maybe Pierre Curtis is the backup point guard. Maybe Julius Wells is the heat check guy off the bench. Yeah. It's pretty good.
That's a decent squad. Yeah.
I think this would be actually much more difficult for the women. If we did the same exercise, I think it would be much more difficult to pare down these players. But
it's very tough to judge things with any sort of
the era
equality. There's also just the bias. There were really good guys that played for Dillard, really good guys that played for Keener, and we've kind of just tried to wipe that from our memory. You know. Jabari Utes, for example, like he was awesome. Chatney Howard, guys like that. And then there's guys that were role players back on good teams. Remember like Charles Watt?
I do.
The post guy when you were there? He was a really solid player. Exactly the sort of guy that could have made the difference on some of those Brady teams. You know, like Trevon Flores, but with all due respect to Trevon Flores, but just a lot more effort and intensity and interest in playing down low because people valued guys right. that played down low. You know, Tyron Flores wanted to go out and right. shoot threes, as anybody would, because that's what.
Well, and we talked about so Nation like and AJ era. And Devon Moore, but we didn't even mention Hitchens and Goins on that team from 13 in terms of role players, yeah. right? I mean, Goins was probably as important mm-hmm. as anybody to the little bit of success JMU had there in that run. So, mm-hmm. yeah, no, it's a fun thing to think about. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed indulging us in some old school JMU hoops. It does show it's not all bad for JMU basketball, but I hope, you know.
Oh, the future.
Bound to get better. Got a new arena bright. Coming. So, but with that, Rob, I think I just so everybody knows, we're going to definitely in the next couple of weeks. I mean, we're excited to talk women's hoops. Going to get into a couple more things. I think we're going to have a guest on from JMU to talk about Giving Day at some point in the next couple of weeks. So that's going to be fun. And we'll be getting much more into softball and lacrosse as we go forward. We were right about baseball. Once they played Louisville, things did change a little bit. I think their combined score of those two games was like 16-1. So
didn't they, did
or
they
three, free, whatever it was. They, yeah. Yeah.
Play, yeah. They play, I mean, it's just a difference. It's very tough to go for the yeah. difference in pitching yep. when you're playing like mid-majors versus a top 20 team. That's when you start to get real Major League Baseball mm-hmm. prospect arms. And I don't know, like Todd, neither you nor I played baseball at a competitive level, but one of my good buddies from grad school
right.
played at Auburn. And he was saying, you know, the difference when you go like top high school, the difference between like 87 and 92, he said, you can handle it. The difference between 92 and 97 mm-hmm. it's closer. It's he said for guys like him who was a good ball player but not a prospect. Mm-hmm. He said you're closing gotcha. Your eyes and praying.
Yeah, no.
There's like the 5 miles per hour difference at that level, and I think that's what you're facing when you go to Louisville. They ran up against a great pitcher. I believe he gave up like one
nothing
hit.
You could do.
I mean, just mowed him down. So nothing. Nope. No reason to be discouraged.
So, anyways, thanks to Pale Fire. Thanks to Mossy Creek. Rob, we will talk again next week.
Yeah. And good luck. To the Dukes in the tournament this weekend. We will be rooting for you, despite the fact that the fan base is a little bit apathetic or checked out right now.
That's right. And good luck to the JMU, the big recruit in the state championship game.
Absolutely. Michael Duke. Christmas. Get
there
it
you
done.
Go. All right. I'll talk to you next week, Rob. Go Dukes.
See you.
You just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.